Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach. The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and Learfield IMG College. Brought to you by Wilson, proud to be the official basketball of NCAA March Madness. Shop the official NCAA game ball on Wilson.com. Now, here's your host, Tim Doyle.
Welcome back to another episode of the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. I'm your host, Tim Doyle, alongside Loyola head coach Tavares Hardy. Now, before we came on the air, coach, you said don't say anything inappropriate question-wise towards you. We have a long history together. Do you think I'd put you on that island?
Hey, man, with you never know. I listened to a couple of your other podcasts, and you just never know with you.
Well, now you're a head coach after quite the long journey, 16 years as an assistant. What could you tell other coaches out there when they're going through their own individual journey?
Yeah, I mean, every story is unique. I mean, my background is so similar to what a lot of coaches have in terms of being a former player, sort of taking that path of, you know, do you go into coaching right away? Do you wait? I had no intentions of being a coach. And so, you know, I went to Wall Street, and after I finished playing ball, decided to do the banking thing and kind of got roped back into coaching. So, my advice to all those coaches who are coming up is embrace your own journey, follow your path, and really understand that if you're going to do it, you better be into it. I had to make a critical choice. I had to talk to a lot of great people in terms of if this is for me or not. But once I decided to do it, I was fully locked and loaded, and it's been great for me and great for my family.
You know, this has been an absolute disastrous start for myself on this podcast, because I got to set the table here, okay? We both, Tavares and I, went to Northwestern. Now, how old are you, coach? Because I can look it up in your bio.
Yeah, I'm 40.
Okay, I'm 38, but I graduated in 2007, and you graduated in
2002.
Yeah, so if you start doing the math on that, people, all right, I did eighth grade twice, and then I got a red shirt year when I left, and then I started late. So let's just say I had a lot of different advantages, because I remember when I was coming in, you were just exiting, and I remember being on a court with you at SPAC, which is the Northwestern Rec Center, and Tavares would still come back and play. And, you know, coming from not the Princeton offense, I kind of played a different style of game. And it was a Saturday morning, and Saturday morning workouts, let's just say, weren't my expertise, because there was a lot of late Friday nights out for me in Chicago. And Tavares and I got into a kind of a heated exchange. I remember I hit a pull-up jump shot, and he goes, "We don't shoot pull-up jump shots here at Northwestern." But you still love to play. And right now, could you still lace them up and get on the court?
It's funny you say that, Timmy, you know, with COVID and everything else going on, for the first time in this is my third year head coach, I jumped in practice the other day. I had to, we needed bodies. And, I will say my team won, consistently. We were getting, 2.5 points per possession, at the end of the tally. So I still like to play. I mean, I know you and I, we flew around the country playing 3-on-3. I miss those days, sort of post-graduation, but, I can still get out there a little bit, but got to be careful. I can't be on recruiting trips in boots and stuff. So that has happened before, and I'm trying to avoid that now.
Yeah, you and I flew across the country playing in different Hoop It Up tournaments and other 3-on-3 tournaments. Coach could play.
A lot of championships, Doyle.
No doubt. And a lot of off-the-court adventures as well. And those are the ones I kind of remember more than the championships, I'm sure. And that's where we're different. That's why you're coaching and I'm hosting right now. But we ran a unique system at Northwestern. And honestly, we kind of ran the same system when we were playing 3-on-3 across the country. What have you brought from Northwestern, from 3-on-3, from Bill Carmody, from JT3? What have you brought to your own program?
No, that the Princeton family has meant so much to me as a player and as a coach. I always say I benefited as a player because I did have a chance to play for two different coaches. Kevin O'Neill, who was crazy, he was defensive minded, he was hard nosed, and then Bill Carmody comes in and he's innovative and creative, and you know, just more normal. And having that balance, 2 years with Kevin O'Neill, 2 years with Bill Carmody, really helped me evolve my game. I had a defensive mindset, and then Coach Carmody taught me how to play on offense. And so being able to carry that into my coaching career, and like you said, working for Coach Carmody for 7 years, working for JT3 for 3 years. And JT3 hates being called JT3, by the way.
So good to know. Though it's important in case we have him on, Coach. Thank you.
John Thompson III. So, you know, just working for those guys and the way they see the game, obviously the Pete Carrill legacy, you know, just ball movement, player movement. So much of how the game is played now is what you and I were taught back in the day from Coach Carmody. And so it's been able to help me evolve through my career when I can point to, okay, you know, you see this action that we're doing. Well, Boston Celtics do the same thing. The Denver Nuggets do the exact same thing. So being able to showcase that and show our guys how the complete package helps you develop as a total player, really helps us in recruiting. It helps us have success on the offensive end. Now I gotta get back to that defensive stuff because we struggle.
You know, the Princeton family, we had Chris Mooney on the podcast and we talked about John Thompson III. Do not call him JT3. Mitch Henderson, Brian Earl, yourself. I mean, now the tentacles, Craig Robinson was a head coach at one point at multiple stops. The tentacles are starting to spread, but take us under the hood a little bit because you work for two coaches under that Princeton offense. Was there any terminology, mannerisms, things they said in meetings that were the same, or were they totally different?
No, they were very similar in a lot of ways, but you also got to remember at Georgetown, you know, he also, Coach John Thompson III also had the heavy influence of Coach John Thompson Jr., the legend. And so he was mixing two legends with who he was as a coach in addition to having his own identity. But, you know, the going down the line, I heard you and Mooney talking about that. That stuff's consistent. You know, Northwestern, we had to play a little unique. We had to play, once we got sort of a good shooting team, we got rid of you and got guys that can make shots from three. We were able to play faster. We were able to jack a lot of threes, and it really helped us score the ball. We led the Big Ten in scoring. A lot of people don't even realize that for 2 or 3 years in a row. You know, the Georgetown legacy, you know, we had pros. What I would say, Timmy, is, you remember back at Northwestern, sometimes you would cut back door and Vince Scott would throw you a pass and you'd stretch you out a little bit, as Bill Carmody would say. You'd catch it and you'd be falling away and you kind of flip it up over your head and spin it a little bit, hope it bounces off the backboard and goes in. You know, when I got to Georgetown, we'd do that exact same thing, be a bad pass, and, you know, they drop it to a guy and he just picks it up and reverse dunks it. And so just understanding, you know, that variance in coaching. But even here at Loyola, we got different style of guys, and we're able to kind of take from both sides and do what's right for us.
You know, you were pretty close at Northwestern of getting them over the hump, of getting them to their first tournament. And in coaching, you know, you go to a tournament, what doors does that open for assistant coaches, right? That's the what if game. I mean, as a broadcaster, I play the what if game. You know, what if this happens, that happens? Now all of a sudden, I am calling NBA games. So it's a similar parallel industry where, you know, the right break, someone likes you, you have some wins, but you don't get over the hump at Northwestern, and then you leave Northwestern. How difficult was that decision?
It was tough. I mean, we had a lot going on. You know, I really do appreciate my time there. It was so valuable, and I'm so thankful to Coach Carmody for giving me the opportunity. Remember, I mean, you were 24, I was 26 as a Big Ten assistant coach, coaching you. So, you know, it was challenging, but, you know, being able to help Coach Carmody get us to a point where we had, you know, four of the best teams in Northwestern history, four straight postseasons, back-to-back 20-win seasons. You know, I felt like that group was good enough to be an NCAA tournament team. We just didn't get over the hump. We won the last few teams out. And so, you know, as time went on and Coach Carmody moved on, it was a challenging time for me, not to get too personal, but that year was tough. My mother passed away. We lost. They let go of Coach. And just trying to figure out, okay, what's next? I've been there for 7 years. You know, Coach Collins came in. He offered me the job. It was an incredible experience to be with him for his first 2 months on the job. It really showed me what it's like to build a program You know, I had never had that experience before. So that was great. But at the end of the day, I just kind of felt like I needed to change. You know, it had nothing to do with Coach Giles, had nothing to do with Northwestern. You know, I was excited about an opportunity to go work in a new market, new program, and get new experiences. And that's why I went to Georgetown. But, you know, really do appreciate, you know, all the coaches that I worked for, going from Georgetown to Georgia Tech, being able to coach in the ACC for Coach Pastner. Just a wide array of experiences that have helped me develop and really had me in a position that I'm in today to be successful.
You know, it's interesting. I'm one of the few people, one of the first to know when the transition from Wall Street to coaching was going to happen. Do you know where we were, Coach Hardy?
Ooh. that's a tough one.
Let's just say that we both weren't sober at the time. We were at the Old Town Art Fair, and which is on North and Wells. And obviously, I was 23 years old, so I was enjoying myself legally. And you were there, and you pulled me aside, and you were like, hey, next year, I'm going to coach you. And I was like, oh, yeah. Does this mean I have to stop drinking? Like, what's going on here? Like, are you going to start watching me? You were like, no, it's cool. Just keep it under your hat. So that's what I actually knew pretty early on. And this was before social media, before Instagram. There was no camera phones. We were taking pictures of each other, kind of documenting it. But you talked about building your program. And Chris Collins eventually did get them over the hump and get Northwestern to a tournament. Now you take over a struggling Loyola program. What's the most important thing to get right when you're attempting to turn a program around?
Yeah, you know, when you think about Loyola, for me, like, I really wanted this job. And it wasn't, I just wanted to be a head coach. I knew what Loyola was all about. I knew what it took to be successful. To me, you know, it's a hard job, which all jobs are, but it's a job that has incredible opportunity, incredible growth potential, like Northwestern. And like you said, Chris Collins, you know, leaving Duke, coming to Northwestern, he had to adjust his mindset in some ways, but he didn't adjust his expectations for being successful. And so, you know, I learned from him how to sort of set those expectations early. And all the experiences I had at Northwestern, at Georgetown, at Georgia Tech, led me to being prepared for this job. You know, what we've done here in, you know, going on our third year is sort of really lock in year one on laying a foundation, getting our culture in place, making sure we have the right people in place, making sure we set the expectations, and our guys have bought in. Now, we didn't come in here guns a-blazing. You know, we didn't run anybody off. We haven't had any transfer since I've been here, which is unheard of in today's market. And so working with what we had and just laying a solid foundation has us to a point where we feel like we got a chance to be pretty good once we start playing this season. You know, we've recruited well all 3 years. Our guys are learning. They understand our system. They understand what we're trying to do. And now it's just about taking that next step and getting over the hump.
You grew up on the tough streets of, do you consider that the South Side, or do you consider that Joliet?
Yeah, no, we're Joliet. We don't try to pretend we're Chicago. I mean, I spent my time in Chicago, so I can claim it. You know, I lived there. So when I tell people I'm from Chicago, I'm not lying. But back when I was at Northwestern, I didn't claim Chicago. I claimed Joliet.
Okay, so Joliet, made famous by the Blues Brothers. I don't know if you would agree by that. Who would you say Joliet's made famous by?
No, definitely Blues Brothers. You know, we get a lot of love for the prison and the movie, that TV show Prison Break. Yeah, one of the largest prisons in the world in our hometown. But blue collar town, just I love my city.
You know, when you walk into a recruit's house, you know, you could play a lot of different people, right? You can wear a lot of different hats, right? You want to go Joliet in that blue collar. You couldn't be any more prim and proper than Northwestern. Then you coached in DC. Then you went down south. Like, what is your pitch when you go in there, or do you adjust it for every recruit?
No, I mean, I don't adjust who I am, but I certainly leverage the fact that I've had a lot of unique experiences, and that's who I am. I used to always say that was my competitive advantage. You talk about the movie Blues Brothers, Joliet borders Elwood. You know, it was Joliet, Jake, and Elwood. And so, you know, I'd say probably 70% of our the kids I grew up with were like me, you know, lower income, single parent, African-American kids. But the other 30%, were kids from Elwood, which were farmers. And so, you know, being able to navigate both those worlds growing up helped me as I went to a high school where it was probably, you know, less than 15 of us Black kids at an all-white high school, going to Northwestern. You know, I thought the people in my high school were rich. And I get to Northwestern and there's a whole another world. And so being able to learn and grow from all those experiences, not taking anyone for granted. I always say the jobs I had growing up, you know, working at Long John Silver's and Bob Evans. And then I got the best job a high school kid could ever want as a telemarketer selling Discover cards. Like it was awesome. And so like the people I worked with, the shit, I'm serious, like the cooks and the cashier workers and the manager at the telemarketing firm, who in my mind had made it, which it was a great job. Like, you know, just interacting with all those different people helped me to get around to your question. Helped me as a coach. It helped me, you know, I've recruited everywhere from New York City to, you know, Atlanta to Chicago to Des Moines, Iowa, or Southern Illinois, which is very similar to Des Moines, Iowa. And so like, you know, that versatility is who I am. And I enjoy that because I believe all kids and all people from all backgrounds deserve opportunities to go to places like Loyola and the other places I've been.
You know, you mentioned your mother passing. I remember, you know, going to your sister's wake, and that was difficult for me. I couldn't imagine what it was like for you. So you've had different challenges, different adversities, but man, we've never seen anything like this, you know? And I have two kids. You have four kids, beautiful children, and that ain't easy being at home right now, right? It's not easy on a marriage. It's not easy for the kids. And now how are you dealing with this as a coach leading a program? Because, and I'm going to tell you this more as a friend, and you know, maybe I know we're doing this on air, but you actually don't know. You may know, but you don't know the effect that you have on your kids for the rest of their life. I mean, I go back 15 years ago. I remember Bill Carmody sitting us all down on chairs and going through guy by guy and him telling Evan Seacat he makes shots in practice, but he doesn't make them in the game, and that I drink too much. And if I didn't drink, I would be playing more minutes. Like, I'll tell you, 15 years later, coach, I remember that vividly. So the effect you have on your players, what's your message been during this pandemic?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's uncharted territory. I know we've all heard the cliches, but like you said, think about it. None of us have prepared for this. And what I can say is, look, not even me as the leader of this program, not my boss, not her boss. You know, we're all trying to navigate this thing together. You know, I feel bad for, you know, everyone, but in particular seniors. My daughter's in eighth grade. Like, this was supposed to be the year she's supposed to be the superstar on the basketball team until she get to become a freshman. And now, you know, she stinks again because she's the young girl again. And so she's not going to have that opportunity. And I feel the same way for some of our guys, some of our seniors who have paid their dues. But, you know, the most important thing is being sort of there for them, being real with them, not putting our own individual goals and perspectives over theirs. Like, we're going to do what's right for our student athletes, and we're going to help them, and we're going to try to put them in position to where they come out of this in a position of success, in a position of power. And so that's what we've been trying to lock in on. But as you say, I mean, it's still, who knows? There's still so many moving parts, and so we can try to manage it as best we can. But at the end of the day, we just got to be stay strong in our faith and stay strong that we're doing the right things by our student athletes. And I believe things will work out.
Have you seen anything as far as unity with the guys? You know, like, I remember playing, you know, Caps, which was obviously a drinking game at Northwestern. That was how we bonded. Okay. But have you seen any unity with your guys? Because I'm just curious, as a former student athlete, like, does this bring guys together, or is everyone just kind of hanging out by themselves?
No, you know, we're in a little bit of a unique situation in that, you know, our school, our campus is not open. And so we just have a select group of students in the men's and women's basketball programs who are here because the anticipation was we would be playing our games. And so those got pushed back a little bit, but yeah, they have to be unified. And they're doing a good job. I got a good group of guys, Tim. You know, that's important to our culture. Some I inherited, some I recruited, or we had recruited as a staff, but, you know, they're focused, they're locked in. You know, you and I know that there's a normalcy that we want to have as college students, but we also want to make sure that in these changing times, we're not setting off fire alarms or doing anything crazy. And the guys understand that there's a microscope on them. And so, you know, you got to be even more normal to get through these changing times. And so, you know, they bought into it. They want to play. They want to play in a safe and secure manner. And that's what we've been all about during this pandemic since we've been back on campus.
You know, what's unique in your individual household is you were a heck of a player, two-time All-Conference at Northwestern, but your wife, is she the best athlete in the house? Let's just come out and decide.
When you say the word athlete, and I hate to say this about her, but absolutely. but you got to distinguish, though. I mean, and she's going to hear this because she's a lovely woman who supports her husband. We've been together for a long time. And when you say the word athlete, though, she was more of an athlete than a ball player. I was more of a ball player. You know, there was times, but you know, Timmy, my wife, she was the number one ranked high jumper in Illinois all 4 years of high school. She had D1 offers in volleyball, track and basketball. You know, she just, when she got to Northwestern, I shouldn't say this, but you know, she just, she studied a lot more than I did. No, I wanted to be in the gym. And you know what I'm trying to teach my guys, I got to be the head coach now. You can do both, everyone. You can do both. And we kind of needed, we should have merged together a little bit more than what we did. I should have brought her into the gym and she should have drove me to class a couple more times.
Well, you got a lovely wife, Billy, four children, Mariah, Jasmine, TJ, and Noah. You've certainly accomplished a lot. Yeah, that's interesting to hear, like, that story about, you know, you in the gym more and your wife, Billy, kind of studying more. I remember being at St. John's and we had someone come in to speak to us and they asked, who's going to the NBA? Raise your hand. And I obviously didn't raise my hand, right? And everyone else raised their hand. And I remember thinking, like, looking over at, like, Abe Cada. No offense, I love Abe. Great guy. He used to wear the jerseys, the white jerseys. I don't know. We used to call him something different. Yeah. Every term that was coming to mind was derogatory right there. So I had to be careful what I said. But I remember looking at Abe and being like, dude, you average like 1.1 rebound. You going to the league? Like, that ain't going to happen. But now that I'm older, you know, I respect that Mike Jarvis wanted everybody to have that mindset of trying to get better. But you're at a school like Loyola. How is that as a head coach, wanting your guys to get better, but also knowing that this window of playing basketball and going to school is really going to be the difference in the rest of your life?
Yeah. You know, I don't have regrets, but I do have, I do think a lot about, you know, I wish I knew then what I know now. And so that's sort of my why as a coach. So many things that, you know, I wish that I did attack school in a better way because I see what opportunities I had even without doing it. Think about if I would have been running for president of Northwestern, you know, student government. Think about if I really was locked in. I knew I was hedging myself with great internships. And so I was locked in on that. I knew that there was a world outside of basketball. But just thinking about all the things I could have learned that I didn't. And so embedded in our culture as a program, you know, and I said this in my interview, and it's been a buildup of going from Northwestern to Georgetown to Georgia Tech. Like when I came here, so much of who we are is based off of not being just an athlete, but you do want to be great athletically. So we say pursue greatness in athletics. So win championships and strive to be a pro. Do all the things that come with that, which is a lot, right? But not just that, pursue excellence in your academic realm. Be a leader on campus. It's a big part of our culture. We had a kid who, Kavon Scott last year, he was a junior when I got the job, and Kavon came to me and he was like, you know, I'm thinking about joining SAC. What do you think? And I said, don't just join, like be active in it. And so a year later, he becomes president of SAC. And then he becomes a member of the Green and Gray Society, which is this big organization on campus, a big time organization to get into. And so like just a small, to your point earlier, a small conversation from the head coach saying that, yo, this is important, this is big, it really helps, and it helps our guys. So that type of stuff is embedded in what we do here at Loyola. We don't play around with it, and we are doing everything we can to prepare our guys to be successful in everything that they do.
Well, I have to give you major props from your social media and the stances you've taken. Obviously, you and I have not personally had conversations, but I could talk about guys like Drew Nicholas, who played at Maryland, and him and I have had, I've known Drew since I'm a little kid, and we've had some uncomfortable talks, and he's been passionate about the last few months. And I look forward to our conversations. Maybe we could do it over a beverage or two to kind of lighten the mood, because it's uncomfortable for me at times. And I, we've never connected on that level. Drew and I, you and I haven't, but I think it's such a healthy thing. What have you kind of pointed to your guys during all that? Because I know that's kind of a broad question, but that was a lot to digest, especially throwing a pandemic during all that.
No, absolutely. One thing I will say, and, I'm trying to say it the right way. I don't want to sound, like we're all perfect and we know everything about everything, because we don't. But there's a couple things about what you just asked. And, number one, building authentic relationships with our student athletes is at the core of who we are as a program. And what I'll say is this, Timmy, I never, ever want to impose my will or my beliefs on my players. And I let that be known. I want them to be who they are, and they will never be judged, or if we have a difference of opinion, they will never be punished or anything of that nature for having that opinion. I love good pointed discussions. And at the end of the day, we go about our business and we still have our great relationships. So that's, I would say, at the forefront. But also say, as a Black head coach, there is sort of an added responsibility to make sure that you are addressing these issues, not just for my Black players, but for my white players or my international guys, to make sure that they understand a little bit of history and how we got here. And then I guess, the last thing I would say about it is, to be honest, Timmy, this is something we've done from day one. Since I got the job, we've had these types of discussions. We've had these type of conversations before all this stuff went down. Case in point, one of our preseason or early season bus trips last year, this is before George Floyd and all that stuff. We watched the movie Lincoln on the bus, which is not a, for college kids, you know how it is on the bus. You want to sleep, you want to eat the Cheetos and the Oreos and listen to your music. But they watched it with me, and we talked about, just sort of how slavery was abolished and all the different things that were going through. And you get to the hotel and you got your pregame meal, which I know you miss, or your night before the game meal, your chicken fingers and your lasagna. And we had like an extra hour and a half conversation about all the different things that led to sort of where we are today. So that type of stuff has been going on. Again, not to say we're perfect, but it was easy for us to continue into these conversations.
It's pretty amazing. You talk about the bus ride, it brings back a story for me. It's funny, but it's not, because even I was uncomfortable. I remember watching Blazing Saddles, and I don't know if anybody's watched that movie. It's from like the 70s and stuff, but they said the N-word like 150 times. And I remember being on the bus being like, we probably shouldn't be watching this. But then, meanwhile, you're watching Lincoln. But that, I think it's great, because look at the evolution from coaching 20 years later, right? And I don't know if our coaches, I just remember being on the bus being like, oh man, this is painful, because obviously we had a diverse team. I was like, I can't believe they're saying this. And I remember that. I just wanted to share that story. You don't have to comment on that, but I do remember that. I was like, man, watching Blazing Saddles, like, this is wild. Last question for you, and I probably should have mentioned this a little bit earlier, but and gets back to kind of you backing up what you're preaching. It's one thing to preach, but then one thing to back it up. You hired a woman assistant coach. Mm-hmm. Can I call her Tiny Adams, or is Tiny Absolutely. Just a nickname?
Absolutely. She prefers Tiny.
Okay. So you bring in Tiny Adams. What message do you think that sent to your guys?
Again, we have a great group of young men who, number one, they trust me. They trust me to make the right decisions in that regard. But number two, they're excited. All they wanted, They wanted someone that cared about them. They wanted someone that was passionate about helping them develop on and off the court. And she exudes that, you know, along with our other coaches. That's a cornerstone of what our program is all about in terms of, again, student athlete focus. And so, you know, she's come in and hit the ground running. She loves being in the gym with the guys. She puts them through intense workouts. I had to pull her back a little bit. we got to get through practice, coach. you know, they got to be able to walk tomorrow. But she's, you know, she's experienced. She was a great player herself. She played long time overseas professionally. And so, you know, male or female, our guys aspire to do what she did. She was one of the all-time greats at Morgan State. All our guys want to accomplish what she did in college and go on and play professionally. And so that message translates regardless of gender, regardless of level. And she's been phenomenal to have with us.
Well, I think we've gotten heavy. We've talked family. We got deep. We talked about your journey. All right, I need this for my own self-satisfaction. Okay, as we wrap up, last question for you. What is your best Tim Doyle story? All right, hold on. I'm going to give you a little break here so you can think about it, okay? It can be PG-13, okay? It doesn't have to be R-rated. We know there's plenty of those, okay? Let's give the best PG-13 story.
All right, best Tim Doyle story. I'm trying to separate because, again, you know, just to keep me safe, you know, although I knew that I was a prospect for the job, I didn't have the job when I bumped into you randomly, accidentally on the streets of Chicago. So I'm still a 26-year-old banker at the time. So just clear, you're just an old college student. But you know, honestly, I would say the best Tim Doyle story. It's probably not even that funny or anything. And I apologize. I didn't think of anything better. But I just remember. I coached you differently than I coached everybody else because you could handle it. And I had to tell you sometimes, like, look, man, I know you don't want to pre-practice. I know you don't want to shoot jumpers right now. Like, look, I get it. I was like, just do it a little bit so that we can pretend so I can get on the other guys to go harder. Like, you were just as old as me. So like, what I look like when you shoot like 100 jump hooks, like it wasn't going to make you any better at the time. You were going to be who you were. So I just remember, I remember coaching you in a manner like, look, you know, just pretend like I'm teaching you something and, you know, just make sure you have that 4-1 assist turnover ratio when we start playing this game. So that's how I thought about you.
That's so funny. My Tavares Hardy story. If you don't know, just go to his Twitter. He's got the Shiggy challenge out there. So that's all I'll say. All right. If you want to see a peek under the hood of Tavares Hardy, know that that dance has been practiced on. Coach, we appreciate your time so much. Thanks so much for joining us. I hope your wife, Billy, wish you guys well down the stretch, your beautiful children. And you out there listening, thanks so much for tuning in to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast. I'm Tim Doyle. Join us next time for a wonderful coaching guest.
Thanks, Tim.